Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of South Tower Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, South Tower, the Elgin, Texas. Today is the 23rd of July, 29th day of the fourth lunar month, 2029. We're going to start our service today. Continue on in two timely greetings, volume one, Lucy Hollis. We're on number three. Okay, we're going to do a question and answers discussion, part one. Opening prayer thought. Text of address of Lucy Hollis, August 17, 1946. This is this afternoon. Our prayer thought is found on pages 149 and 150 of the Mount of Blessing. We shall read the first four paragraphs. These are based on the scripture, be not therefore anxious for the morrow. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Mount of Blessing, 149 and 50. If you have given yourself unto Yahweh to do His word, you have no need to be anxious for tomorrow. We take into our hands the management of the things with which we have to do and depend upon our own wisdom for success. We are taking a burden which Yahweh has not given us. We very well have anxiety and anticipate danger and loss. For it is certain to befall us that when we really believe that Yahweh loves us and means to do us good, we shall come to worry about the future. We shall trust Yahweh as a child trust the loving parents. Then our troubles and torments will disappear. For our will is swallowed up in the will of Yahweh. For Yahshua has given us no promise of help in hearing today the burden of the tomorrow. One day alone is ours, and during this day we are to have preserved. For this one day we are to place in the hand of Yahshua in the solemn service all our purposes and plans, casting all our care upon Him, for He cares for us. I know the thoughts that I think towards you, said to Yahshua, thoughts of the peace and not of evil, to give you an unexpected end, for the quietness and confidence shall be your strength. Let us pray for an abiding realization that Yahweh has promised help in the hearing, bearing our burdens not of tomorrow but of today. Pray that we each day place in His hands all our purposes and plans, all our cares and anxieties. Then only can we rest in the assurance that in the quietness and in the confidence shall be our strength. Text of address by V.P. Harder. We're going to entitle questions and answer discussion. That's actually the title of our sermon. Several of you have come to me lately with some questions that are apparently very important to you. For this reason, we shall devote the study hour this afternoon to answer them. I shall now read the question. Are we, Brother Harlot, thus ready to ordain among us the Lord Yahshua's Supper? Let us see, just before the institution of the ordinance of humility, Yahshua said unto his disciples, ye are clean, but not all. One was out, or one was not, in spite of the fact that Judas was unworthy, the ordinance could not longer have been put off. Albeit, as soon as he had partaken of the sacrament, he arose, went out, and did his devilish work. Afterwards, his eyes were opened to the crime he had committed, and he hanged himself. For the other disciples, though, were as ready or as worthy for the sacred service as they could have been up until that time. For the Yahshua's Supper was ordained in the remembrance of the Yahshua's sacrifice, not for the cleansing of the partakers of it from their sin, but to cleanse them from the sinners, as is seen from the Passover in Egypt, and from the fact that thereafter Judas no longer walked with the disciples. Plainly then, the celebration of the ordinance brought the blessing to the 11, but the damnation to the one, Judas. There have been a number of reform movements among us before, and unto our time, they all ordained the Yahshua's Supper in their midst, but if did not profit them, it did not make them or their work lasting and eternal. As a matter of fact, they went out of the existence even faster than they came in. Now let us read from 1 Corinthians 7:17 and 18. Now, in this that I declare unto you, I praise you not, that you come together not for the better, but for the worse. For first of all, when you come together in the church, I hear that there be division among you, and I partly believe it. For the Corinthians were having controversy, causing division among themselves, and so they're getting together in the church was not for the better, but for the worse. If we meet together only for the purpose Is it not for the better to stay at home? 1 Corinthians 11:27-30. Wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Asherah unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Asherah. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily eateth and drinketh damnation unto himself, not discerning the Yahshua's body. For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. For Yahshua's bread and cup are to be taken by a people only after they have examined themselves and have seen to it that they are not causing trouble, that their meeting together is for the better, not for the worse. Now if we have reached that standard of righteousness, then we should by all means ordain the Yahshua's Supper among us. But if we have not come to that point as yet, then our instituting of the ordinance of the humility among ourselves would only be unto our own damnation, not to our salvation. Our chief duty right now is not to urge the observance of the Yahshua's Supper, but rather first to come up to the standard of the perfection which the message of today along with the message of yesterday urges the Yahshua's never called for revival and reformation, because the church is enjoying good spiritual life. For the Yahshua's Supper, therefore, is never to be ordained as the beginning of such a revival and reformation, but at its completion. For Yahshua did not institute the orders at the beginning of his ministry, but did so at its close. And if we would avoid causing divisions among ourselves, we should never discuss the sins of others, nor pass judgment on them, if we cannot write the matter privately with the ones that thought. And we had better either discuss it with no one or else follow the instructions given in Matthew 18:16-17. But if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of a two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he shall neglect to hear them, tell it unto the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as an heathen man and a prophet. Okay, it says, we cannot lead the Yahshua. He is the leader. We of ourselves never know what is right and what is wrong unless we are told. Easy enough. If we do whatever we are told to do, no more and no less, we shall be accounted worthy. So far, our Yahweh sent message has not brought to our attention the honest evidence to accept it, but it is pleading with us to depart from the abomination, to cast aside all our idols, to put away all our private ideas and opinions, to wholeheartedly return unto the Spirit. For the message, moreover, teaches that we should remain in the Mother Church and work strictly for her salvation. For the conclusion, then, is that as long as we stay with her, there seems to be no need for the ordaining that she has suffered privately among ourselves, perhaps not before the hour comes for the testament to be separated from the intestament as taught by the types, by the Passover in Egypt, and by the Passover on the night when the Jews were to go out, never again to walk with the twelve. Furthermore, no one seems to know when and how to observe the sacrament. Well, no, not until 1970, when Brother Johnson restored the creation calendar. That would give it to him to do. And he put everybody back on true time. The Adventists put them all back on true time to keep the feast day. We got a new moon Sabbath coming up tomorrow on the 24th of July. And that's one of them. Some observe it every Sunday or every Sabbath, some occasionally, some every quarter, and so on. It seems logical to say that when Yahweh comes or commands us to ordain it anew, he will tell us also how and when to observe it properly. And that's what he did with Brothers in 1970. He was an Adventist minister to begin with, that brother. And he grew and graduated from one step to the other until he finally was given the creation calendar to restore and put the LAP back on true time. And I joined him in 1970, and that's what I did. I practiced it all the feast days, and that's where it separated the appointed time. And Brother Johnson published the creation calendar and sent it to the Adventists all over the United States and the world, and wherever he could, and they rejected it. So they really didn't want to see it be the origin of that true separate. Trumpets and the seals. Those of you who are having to answer controversial questions, just say to your opponent, one of us is wrong, for sure. We cannot both be right, to say the least. And so let us carefully and impartially look into the subject. I would tell them that we teach the trumpets just as John saw them in the vision. For example, the Revelation says, and the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000,000, and I heard the number of them, and thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on of them, having breastplates of the fire and of the genesis and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as the heads of a lion, and out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. That is, three was the third part of men killed by the fire and by the smoke and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths, for their power is in their mouth. And then their tails, where their tails were like unto serpents, and had heads, and with them they do hurt. Revelation 9:16-19. This is a descriptive picture which the Revelator gives us of the 200 million horses and horsemen. That's in Revelation 9:16, where the following objectification is as close to John's description of the horses and horsemen as we can make it, and our interpretation of them is accordingly. See track number 5, final warning. Here follows the objectification of the horses and the horsemen, which the general conference puts out to the public. Now, I'm not going to go into that because the general conference is all wrong on that, and I'm not going to put that back into your mind. So I'm going to skip over all of that and pick up on down the line here. Talk about the seven seals. It says, for the Lord of sin teach that the seals began with the resurrection of Yahshua, which, as you know, was about 70 years before. John the Revelator had the vision of the seals. Let us now hear what the voice of the revelation itself says. Revelation 4:1, after this I looked, and behold, a door was open into heaven, and the first voice which I heard was as it were of a trumpet talking with me, which said, come up hither, and I will show thee things which will be hereafter. For the voice spoke emphatically that the things which John was about to be shown had been not taken place, and were not then taken place, but that they were to take place later in the stream of time, since they were to take place after John had the vision after 96 A.D., not in the first century of the apostolic era. Then is it not blasphemy to teach contrary unto what the voice said, to say that the seals began over 3 decades before shown to John? No, the seal cannot therefore begin with the apostolic church. To find out the truth of them, read tract number 15 into the seven churches. Okay, the next question is, what about Revelation 12? Does a woman clothed with the sun symbolize the church from the Pentecost on, clothed with the gospel sign of Yahshua? When the dragon attacked the woman, she was already clothed with the sun, and her child, Yahshua, was not yet born. Has this been so, how can her son's clothing be symbolical of her being clothed with the gospel of Yahshua, and how could she have been a representation of the Christian church, seeing that neither the gospel nor the church were then in existence? And how can she, the church, be the assured mother before the Christian church herself is born? She cannot, is the overall answer. For the theory then that the woman takes her beginning at the Pentecost is about as logical as it is to say that the chicken is hatched before the egg is laid. Is the slaughter of Ezekiel 9 to take place in the world or in the church? Is it the 7 last plagues, or is it the purification of the 7th day as of the church? Ezekiel 9:1 and verse 4 and 9. He cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charged over the city to draw near, even every man to slaughter them with his destroying weapons in his hand, and the Yashira said unto him, go through the midst of the city to the midst of Yarush, and sit a mark upon the foreheads of the men that saw, and that cried for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. Then said he unto me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceeding great, and the land is full of the blood, and the city is full of the perversion. For they say, Yahshua has forsaken the earth, and Yahshua seeth not. For the anger is the charge of the city, the reason not of the world, and not of the battle, even altogether. Uninformed believer knows that the terms Jerusalem, Judah, and Israel mean the Seventh-day Adventist Church collectively, never even as much as imply the world. They have always meant the church collectively and always will mean the church collectively, for that is what they are. For the sword of Ezekiel 9 is positively not the same as the seven last plagues, Revelation 16, because the plagues fall on the tablets, but the slaughter on the Judah and Jerusalem. Moreover, the angels of the Ezekiel 9 slay everyone who does not have the mark, but the plagues do not slay anyone. By arresting Moses' writings, the Jews tried to refute Yahshua's teaching. And it is certain that if the living sin continue to arrest Sister White's writing and turn to refute the message for today, then their end shall be even more mournful than was the Jews. Concerning what she says about it, Ezekiel 9 reads, Testimony, Volume 3, page 267, Volume 5, page 211. Also, the Great Controversy, 656, 65, or 657. Ezekiel 9 pictures the judgment of the living in the house of Seventh-day Adventist Church of the Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17. The sitting of the saints and the destruction of the wicked in the church. I think I have time for another question. This question is asked in five parts, and so I shall answer it accordingly. Question one, does the prophecy of Nahum predict World War II or some other war? For the answer, let us go directly to Nahum's prophecy. Nahum 2:1. He that dashes in pieces is come up before thy face. Keep the munition, watch the way, make thy loins strong, fortify thy power mightily. Nahum predicts that the one who starts the war, he that dashes in pieces, will have been well prepared before the start of the war, but his opposing power, Assyria, will not have been prepared until after the war begins. That is, after the one who dashes in pieces comes before Assyria's face. Then it is that Assyria makes preparation to meet him. Then it is that she makes her loins strong and fortifies her power mightily. Now, since it is a known fact that the Great Britain and France were not prepared to fight Hitler when he opened up his guns against him, and as every one of the allies began to prepare themselves badly after Hitler started to dash and face it. The truth stands out as clear as a crystal, that he who dashes and faces is none other than the Hitler, the one. It was really at the commencement of the war, the one who broke in several pieces Germany itself, the British Empire, and many other countries. The Allies, therefore, must be the antithetical of Schiller. This is true number one. For true number two, we shall read about the means of the travel and the transportation and the day that the war preparations are made and the war itself fought. Nahum 2:3-4. For the church shall be with the flaming torches in the day of his preparation. The church shall rage in the streets. They shall jostle one another in the broad ways. They shall seem like the torches. They shall run like the lightning. These verses portray the means of the travel and the transportation in the day that the war preparations are made and the war fought. Since World War II is the only war in history for which the preparations described by the Nahum were made and used, while the church, vehicular traffic, moved with the unprecedented speed, lightning-like speed, while mother traffic in air and sea in the city and countryside, streets and broadways, jostle one against another. All these signs of the time mark the time that the war is fought. They leave no room for doubt. They all, in the perfect terms, certify that Nahum predicts World War II. For a third clue, we shall read Nahum 1:15. Behold, upon the mountains, the feet of him that bringeth good tidings and publishes peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn peace, perform thy vows, so the wicked shall no longer pass through thee. He is utterly cut off. Okay, it says, here we are told that at the time the war is fought, someone is to be publishing inspired revelations of the newly revealed truth, the truth of the judgment of the living, the which is to forever separate the wheat from the tares, Matthew 13:30. For the good fish from the bad fish, Matthew 13:47-8, the sheep from the goats, Matthew 25:32, and the wise virgin from the foolish ones, Matthew 25:1-12. These shall no more pass through the church, declares the scriptures. They are utterly cut off. This urging Judah, house of David, everlasting kingdom of heaven and on earth, Daniel 2:44-45, during the 12th hour. The living church, to keep his antipode atonement, a feast, and to perform her vows unto Yahweh, so as to be found worthy of the escaping of the judgments of Yahweh. Hence, Yahweh's plea unto his church is now ringing throughout the land, saying, awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garment, O Jerusalem, the holy city, for henceforth it shall no more come and to thee the uncircumcised and clean. Isaiah 52:1. With these positive signs of the times, inspiration, that each individual decides for himself whether to put confidence in the voice which inspiration itself recommends, or in the voice which uninspired human beings recommend. Henceforth there is to be no confusion among the Yahweh's true people. His watchmen shall lift up the voice, with the voice together shall they sing, for they shall see eye to eye when the Yahshua shall bring again Zion. Well, he's already brought this Zion to the house of David. And that's 2003, actually, when Rose Johnson time was over, the Gilead Center. The Yahshua was there with us, Elijah David, and setting up the Kingdom of David. And Triple Kingdom of David. Okay, question number two. Who does Nahum say will win the war? He that dashes in pieces or Assyria. Although Nahum's prophecy places a greater emphasis on the fall of Assyria, it nevertheless declares that they both will lose out, for the speaking of him that dashes in pieces, the scripture says, and they have 2:5, they shall be counted worthy, they shall stumble in their walk, they shall make a haste to the wall thereof, and the defense shall be prepared. To recount his worthies implies that the number of the worthies, captains and generals, and other mighty men, along with his fine army, is diminishing, and hence the need of the recounting, and thus the worthies are to stumble in their walk. That is, they are to make some kind of a blunder on their march to victory and cause them to fall, and this is exactly what happened, and for the Hitler's army stumbled by the waging war against Russia while he was in war with the Great Britain. That critical moment of his decree was Hitler's greatest folly. England was just about to give up, but the German army pulled away and went to fight Russia, and to the fall of the worthies being mentioned before the fall of Assyria is mentioned. The prophecy thus reveals that he that dashes in pieces, Hitler, was to fall first. Okay, question number three. Why is Hitler's title "He that dashes in pieces"? Well, that is all Hitler did. He began to dash in pieces from the very inception of the war. None were able to stand against him, and even after he disappeared and Germany surrendered, the breaking in pieces continued and as yet has not stopped. As a result, the whole world is broken in pieces, not only geographically, but politically and socially and economically as well, for the English Empire is still tottering, and the ominous squeaks are becoming louder and louder with each passing day. Hitler therefore deserves the title "Dashes in Pieces." In more than one way. Question four. Does not Nahum's prophecy teach that Assyria is to fall completely? It says yes, that is just what we understand it to teach. Very evidently then, Nahum's prophecy forewarned that World War II is not as yet completed. the world itself shows that it is not, and that the Allies saved Russia 1-0. That they would have been better off to have given to Hitler part of Poland than to fight the war and then to lose out to Russia, not only a part but whole of the Poland in which it whole Eastern Europe, moreover Russia, has now become their greater enemy than was Hitler. They did away with the Hitler, but the hot war never completely ceased, and the Cold War was soon added to it. Furthermore, everyone knows that the war is not a settled and that peace has not come, that the war may break out red hot any day. Question 5. What do your thoughts see concerning the war? For the tracks do not say as much. They do not say definitely who he that dashes in pieces is, nor do they say for certain that the World War II is an 800 war. And while track number 14 war this forecast does not or does say that the army of him who dashes in pieces also nevertheless shall fall, that does not say for sure whose army will fall first. Fact number 14, page 12. Comments on the Nahum 2 and 5. Track number 12, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, probably 2 years before track number 14 does, however, says, now, being apparent that the tabernacles of the palace are supposed to represent holiness, and that the woman riding the beast denotes her city, the world's social, economic, political, and religious problems, the truth is clear that the present Christian governments are to be reorganized and ruled by an ecclesiastical head, not by the Hitler. For the church do not tell everything, but what they tell, they tell it straight. This is the end of our study on number 3 of Tommy Green's number, volume 1 by B.T. Hollis. This screen, the universe says this hour, contacts at the 11th hour corner, number 11, click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with the song.